Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Easley switching it in. The U.S. go up. What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra.
Going to try a long hit. What a goal from Lloyd. This is spectacular. It's hit with no regard for humanity. Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is. Switzerland. And Shaqiri has scored in the 90th minute. That was worth the price of admission alone.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back for the second hour of Soccer Matters here. And I want to remind you about Hugh O'Connor's Pub. Hugh O'Connor's Pub, I-10 in the Marquee Entertainment Center. Great English food, incredible beer and whiskey offerings. It is Hugh O'Connor's Pub. Get out there. It is also the home of the Liverpool Supporters Group. And a big shout out to Capelli Sport as well for being great fans of Soccer Matters, providing me with a bunch of small soccer balls that I'm able to hand out throughout the community. So thank you, Capelli Sport. Here is part two with the legendary U.S. Men's National Team goalkeeper, Tim Howard.
Tim Howard joining us, new Dynamo owner investor, just announced earlier today. This is a pre-taped interview in the afternoon. Tim thankfully went back to his hotel to get on Zoom to do this because I'm not capable of doing an interview off the phone. I always love seeing like DeMarcus Beasley go back in his community working with the team, like what you did in Memphis. It's great. And I always remembered at the early times of MLS, I'm like, you know, when these guys all get through their careers.
Totally.
Many of them are intelligent guys, and they're going to handle the big positions, and they're going to be people with a soccer background in these positions.
Yeah.
Memphis, just tell me about what's the most important thing you learned while running that club down there.
Yeah, look, I think when you talk about even what DeMarcus has been doing and players of my generation who are in a position to make change and help run organizations, it's tough sledding. It's tough sledding. There's no easy answers. There's no easy solutions. This is sports. Sports will bring you the highest joys and it'll break your heart. I mean, look, in Memphis, I think the great thing for me as a learning tool was, you know, in the USL, you wear a lot of hats, you know, particularly when you're starting an organization from the ground up. And that's the key answer to your question. We started an organization from the ground up, so we had nothing. And so when you say, like, you had nothing, you had nothing. Didn't have a name, didn't have colors, didn't know what people wanted. And so we had to, as an ownership group, go into the community, knock on doors, go into the local supporters pub, and which wasn't our supporters pub, by the way. It was a U.S. Men's National Team Arsenal supporters pub, and go in and say, hey, if there's a team in Memphis, what does that look like for you? What draws your attention? What do you enjoy? What would we do to keep you coming back? And so that was a huge starting point. I think that part I learned was important. I also learned that culture within a team is important. Being able to have people understand that you have no divine right to win a football match, right? That there's going to be some highs and lows, but what brings you to work every day? What brings you, what continues to drive you? And that's the North Star has to be the crest and the club and everything about that. And culture is huge because players get injured, they get traded, they get drafted. A multitude of things happen. Things are going well and then your coach gets fired, whatever. There has to be a broader cause to a team. And I think we learned that particularly in the USL, which for a long time was a mercenary league, right? You're getting guys on 1-year contracts and who's the highest bidder. And so you're constantly having to you can't retain a ton of these players. So you're having to create a culture and a why, like why would you come to Memphis next season? And I think I learned that was incredibly important. I knew that was important as a player, but that's also on the inside. That's on the inside of a dressing room surrounded by 22 other guys and you figure it out and with tough conversations. But on the broader scale on the outside, I think driving that culture home and creating something that's sustainable is huge.
Tim, can you go toe-to-toe with people in the front office about the vision of the club, the relevancy? You know, will you ask hard questions of people that are in the front office? And I say this respectfully, honestly.
Of course, yeah, and I think it's definitely respectful. I'm very comfortable having difficult conversations, you know, and I think I say that not to be a rebel rouser, but I say that to, you know, if everybody's pulling in the right direction, then there's no issues having difficult conversations. That's something that I feel like I've always done. I've prided myself on, and look, having difficult conversations is the second step. The first step is building relationships. And once you do that, it's the same as on the field. You know, we're on the field hooting and hollering at each other. That's my brother. He loves me. I understand that. Now, he didn't say something really nice to me, but he was trying to get it. He was trying to get a reaction, and he was trying to drive the team forward. And there's no difference. So building those relationships and then having hard conversations, to me, go hand in hand.
Yeah, because I think, Tim, what the people are thriving for is not a fictitious, you know, great ex-player, goalkeeper, yeah, celebrity, guy who's on the Premier League. They want to see a guy that comes in and does push the envelope with difficult questions and sure, these types of conversations, so that we can make this team more relevant in an amazing soccer community. So I think people are bleeding out for that, and that type, yeah, of a leadership from a real person who's had, mm-hmm, tremendous experience in the game at a variety of levels. And again, this is not being disrespectful to the front office, but people in the front office don't have your background.
No, that's right. And I come into this eyes wide open. I'm completely aware that, you know, the greater community, the fans want to see substance. That, I wouldn't have gotten into this if it was just for fanfare. You know, I'll continue to say that I can lend my name to anything under the sun when it comes to soccer. That's not an issue for me. So, you know, I was excited about the prospect of helping drive an organization forward, like you said, on many levels. The proof will be in the pudding. You know, we'll see, but there will be hard conversations. There'll be great conversations, great ones behind the scenes. To try and, as you said, we're ultimately, at the end of the day, we're in this to win. you don't get into sports for any other reason than to win and to be entertained. And by the way, we get entertained by winning. So I understand how that works.
I think that's music to the fan base's ears and my listeners as well. Tim Howard joining us here, Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. One or two more quick questions. Why did you ultimately leave the USL in Memphis, where, you know, you made some good inroads down there?
We did. Yeah, we did. But again, this was an opportunity that I couldn't turn down. And the exact conversation we're having, I gave a hell of a lot to Memphis, and I did it lovingly and joyfully. And there was some great times. But again, if I, you know, taking on this endeavor would not have allowed for me to give the time to Memphis that it needs in those roles. And so ultimately I had to step back from that in order to take on this incredible challenge. But, you know, I'm very proud. You can imagine anytime you are part of an organization, a sports organization, you hope to leave a legacy and you hope to do something you're proud of. And I mentioned to you before, a blank sheet of paper is what we started with, quite literally, and an idea. And the fact that we're able to build a perennial playoff contender, you know, have some top players and top coaches come through our organization, it's a feather in our cap.
Well, Tim, listen, we really, really thank you a lot for making the effort to come on here. I know you, again, he went back to his hotel to do the Zoom interview. So that is incredibly commendable. Everybody is happy to hear from you. Excited that you're here. Now, are you and I getting on the plane to go get Jurgen Klopp now? Is that the plan here for the end of the day?
I would do it. I've already said I'd be happy to go to Spain. But yeah, you know, we'll see.
Were you
we'll see
serious when you said that?
I mean, technically, yeah. I could sit in front of
you. You know him. You know him well.
I can make a very compelling argument to Jurgen Klopp by his pool in Mallorca. I'm certain I can and could, but so whether I was whether I was serious or not, or whether it would actually happen, two different things. But I'm always there to serve.
Thank you so much again, Tim, for coming on tonight. My listeners really appreciate it, and so do I.
Thanks. Look forward to seeing you again.
All right. That's the legendary Tim Howard.
All right. So that was the full interview with Tim Howard there. And I guess not coming down on anybody, but we have to start asking real questions. These are all things we've really known here about the culture, about the community. We know that's happening. A lot of these articles really seem to me to be press releases. And again, we have to start asking the real questions here in Houston if we want to help the Dynamo turn it around. Okay. So as we go to break here, another quick reminder here for one of our great sponsors, Little Patagonia Empanadas and Cafe on Westheimer. Take a break. When we come back, we'll get into the Jorge Ramos interview. And Jorge, not afraid to say a few things about what's going on in the world of soccer.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. And we're going big, big, big. Before we get to it, though, quick word here for the best in Argentine food. It's Little Patagonia Empanadas and Cafe. Our great friend, Sebastian Abraham, the best in empanadas, and also the traditional Argentine soccer sandwich, the choripan. So get into the location on Westheimer. That's Little Patagonia's Empanada and Cafe. Big guest here to finish it tonight, colleague in the business, even though he's on the Spanish side. I've looked up to him very, very much for not only his talent, but the way he handled his career. He is Jorge Ramos. You'll remember him from Jorge Ramos and Su Banda, hugely popular show. And Jorge joins us now. Jorge, thank you very much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Glenn, what an honor to be here with you. Really, it's a pleasure and congratulations for all these years, bringing the passion of soccer to the audience. And I'm here to really enjoy this time. By the way, those empanadas should be great. When I go to Houston, I should stop by. Tell Sebastian that I will.
We will take you there. We're going to take you there. We're going to knock a bunch of them back. All right. Okay. So Jorge, before we get into a lot of interesting things, and there's so much I want to talk to you about, I do want to just, you know, for those who are out there, you have had this incredibly popular show, Jorge Ramos and Su Banda. The show is finished now. I just want to give you a little bit of a platform to talk about it and, you know, what may happen in the future with you, because you have a lot of people who have always loved your commentary and your insight into the game.
Well, we were 19 years on the air. The first 40 years only radio, and then we combined, or they combined, ESPN combined, radio and television. Everything was doing well. We thought the show was doing fantastic, but they made a decision to move in the Spanish market in ESPN Deportes, everybody around the country to Bristol, Connecticut. They asked me if I want to move to Bristol, Connecticut, and I told them, thank you very much, but not. And that was the end of it. Although they offered me to keep working from where is my house in Miami, I decided that maybe it was a time, you know, to get more freedom and do things by myself. I'm doing nothing now, but I'm still planning to do something. And that's why the show ends. So we were doing well, but maybe not that great. I don't know. They decided that it was better to have everybody in Bristol than to keep the number one show in the network out of the screen. I don't know.
Strange. I mean, do you sense that the industry, both radio and TV, when it comes to football, maybe it's a lot of offloading of expenses now?
Maybe. I have other ideas, Glenn. I don't know if that's the case, or they just have Spanish to comply with diversity. Okay? And nobody told me that. It's just my idea, maybe, because when I see the decisions they make, it really caught my attention. You know, it's very easy to understand that at this point, ratings don't mean anything to them. They want to have the network, the Spanish network, for I don't know what reason, but they don't fight for ratings anymore. And I don't know if it is only ESPN and other networks are the same position. I don't know. It's the only lecture I can do to it, to the situation. But let me tell you, ESPN will survive without Jorge Ramos, okay? I mean, they don't need me. They are the strongest in the market, and they have done fantastic for me, for my family. And well, there is life after ESPN for me too.
Jorge Ramos joining us. You know him from Jorge Ramos and Subanta. But you and I kind of share something in that we both do play-by-play on television. Yeah. I started as an analyst and switched over. And then, you know, you hosted this amazing show, which was kind of a roundtable, great discussion. And then I do radio. I have always loved bouncing back and forth from the two mediums because they are completely different. What about you?
Well, that's another story with ESPN. When I came aboard, they said that for sure I was going to be the number one play-by-play person at the network. I said, well, I want that in writing, in the contract. And they said, no, we cannot put it in writing. But because of the kind of money you are making, you're going to be the number one and you are the best. That's what they told me verbally. But then politics or I don't know what either started to play. Maybe they thought that the other guys were better than me and they have the right to think that. But I didn't like the way I was treated in that area. And then when COVID attacked us, they asked me to do the play-by-play from home. They were sending me the video through my computer, and I had to call the game from the computer. I could replay it in a monitor if I wanted, but you know, the quality of the video was terrible, and I said, I cannot do this anymore. Let's go to a studio. You send me the game via high definition fiber, and I do it from there. And they didn't want to spend. So I wasn't that great for them to spend, you know, in a little studio. So I said, well, then I want to step aside. That's when I said, I want to step aside. Since then, they didn't call me. It seems that they were happy. I decided to step aside. And, well, it is what it is. And maybe one day I go back to call games because that's my passion. That's how people get to know me here in this country, because of the play-by-play. Then I start to host shows and things like that. But play-by-play is my passion. For some reason, that happened with ESPN after being at Fox, calling all kind of games from Copa Libertadores, Mexican League and so on, and Telemundo also before that. But yeah, that's what happened, and they put me in a way aside when they need me. They call me, but they didn't give me the tools for me to do the right job. So for me, I always say this: there is not mediocre job. It is good or it's bad. I don't do mediocre. Half good, half bad. I don't do it. Either I do it right or I don't do it. And that's when I say, I don't want to do it this way anymore. I need that you provide me with the right tools to do my job.
We're talking to the legendary commentator Jorge Ramos, who, again, you'll remember the program, Jorge Ramos and Subanda. Exceptional stuff. Jorge, I want to ask you about a couple of current events here also. Before I get to those, real quick, growing up in Uruguay, where, because you are a man of passion for the game, and I want to remind people that are listening, this is a guy that worked at his career. Nothing fell. He built up this following. And for all you young commentators out there, the work this man did behind the scenes, nobody ever sees or talks about that. But growing up in Uruguay, you did get the gift of passion for football, didn't you?
Yeah, all the Uruguayans, 98% of Uruguayans have the same passion. We are a very little country with less than 3.5 million people. And there is no kid in my country that doesn't try to play soccer. And then if you are not good enough, then you look for other alternative to be involved with soccer. That was my case. I think I was a mediocre goalie. and then I have my team that is in my heart that is called Danubio in Spanish.
Yeah.
And I'm still a fan of it. And yeah, my passion stayed with Danubio. And I started to do a show on Danubio in Uruguay. And even though I left Uruguay in 1976, my passion for the game and for Danubio is like the first day I understood what soccer was in my country. And still every morning I get up and I want to know what's going on. And it's like the first day.
So, Jorge, when you get to America in 76, I mean, it's obvious. You're like, where's football? There's no football here. Did you see?
Remember those days?
Yes.
I used to be ready because ABC was telling us the next month they're going to have a New York Cosmos game against my Chicago's team, and it's going to be in the screen. I got ready for a month to watch a 90-minute game. It was bad. That time was bad.
But when you get here, you don't see the game at the grassroots level. It's not like it's not even close. Do you see that as an opportunity to educate, bring the game to America, work at it, try to get more people involved through all the things that you've done throughout your career?
Yes, and that's what I tried to do. I don't know if I was successful to invite some people.
I'm here to tell you, you were successful. So if nobody's told you that, I'll tell you were successful.
Thank you. Thank you, Glenn, because you are my friend, you say that. But no, I think I did a decent job trying to convince people, you know, to like soccer. And yes, in 1979, a friend of mine, Uruguayan too, he passed away already. I was living in Chicago. He invited me to do a show with him on radio, a weekly show, once a week on Sundays, with all the scores around Latin America and Mexico included, which is Latin America. and I started my career here in this country with him in Chicago. And then we start to do play-by-play in the NASL. And that's how my career started. And I couldn't understand why other people didn't have the passion I had for the game. Or I have more than I have. Or I still have. And so I proposed myself, Jorge, you have to try to make people understand how great this game is. And I've been trying to do that since then. And I keep trying every day.
Well, Jorge, you've done an exceptional job at it, and I can guarantee you there are people that are huge soccer fans today because of the introduction that you gave them. This is the last one, and then we got to go, but I want to bring you back on and get the assurance that you'll come on and do a part two with me real soon.
Okay.
I just want to talk to you about just the commercialization of – and let's just keep it to football because I think it's all sports, but it just seems to be getting – it seems commercial first, competition second to me.
Yeah. Let me tell you, football never is going to die but it's injured. It's injured. I mean, everybody in football, the ones that goes on the pitch, on the field, keep saying, please stop playing so many games per year. The players and the coaches, most importantly, FIFPro, for some reason, keep saying it, but they don't do anything about it. I don't see the union of players doing anything, or the union here in MLS in the United States. I mean, too many games. Now they're playing with 80 games a year. Isn't that crazy? Injuries are more often now, and the game, it doesn't have the beauty it used to have because of it. Okay? And then FIFA comes with this World Cup competition, World Clubs World Cup competition with more teams, and the World Cup with more national teams. And well, I mean, because they are making money. They are making money. Okay? But the players cannot put up with that. I know many are going to say, well, players are making great money too because of it. Well, I think at this point, players are willing to concede some of the money probably to have a better career and not and longer, better and longer career, and not what is going on right now, that they have to play. They don't train anymore. That's it. They don't train anymore. So, yeah, the commercialization of the game, it has been very bad for the game, very good for the ones that, you know, get benefits from the game.
Yeah, I'm still shaking my head about a 48-team World Cup. I don't know how that's competition.
No, participation. You know how many New Zealand and Trinidad and Tobago teams we're going to see in the World Cup? I mean, who is going to watch all those games in the first round? I mean, I'm passionate, but I don't think I'm going to devote so much time to those games.
Jorge, thank you so much for coming on. Can I get a promise that you'll come on and do a part two? Because there's so much I want to get to you with.
Done. Okay, it's a compromise. You just tell me when, how, and I'll be here again.
All right. That's the great, and I would say the legendary, Jorge Ramos. You remember him from ESPN Deportes. Jorge Ramos and Subanda, huge show. Also is an exceptional play-by-play man. I don't think we're going to hear the last of Jorge. We're certainly going to get him back on this show one more time. We're not going to let him run off to Uruguay and disappear. Jorge, thank you so much.
Thank you, Glenn. Thanks to everybody that is in tune with the show. Congratulations for it.
Jorge Ramos. Okay, that does it tonight here for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. So you can listen to that interview, if you didn't get the whole interview, with Jorge Ramos at Spotify, Apple, and Google. A big shout-out to our presenting sponsor, John Daspit, and the Daspit Law Firm. Look, without John and the Daspit Law Firm, we don't get soccer talk on the air. So remember that when you're listening to this show, and subscribe to the podcast. Again, Spotify, Apple, Google, or right here at ESPN 97.5. Until next week, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Hey, reminder, Cactus Music, that's where you get all your vinyl and CDs. Get over there, talk to Quinn. All of the people who work in the store have tremendous music knowledge. It's Cactus Music, the best in vinyl, CDs, and everything around music, whether it's books, T-shirts, hats, you name it, they have it. Final segment of the night tonight, we're doing our part two that I promised you with Jorge Ramos. You remember him with Jorge Ramos and Subanda, one of the most popular programs going when it comes to football talk. Also, he was on Radio Unica, Univision, ESPN Deportes, Telemundo. And we remind you that they called Jorge the, quote, the commentator of the Americas. He joins us now. Jorge, how are you?
It's a pleasure to be here again, Glenn. I'm doing fine and always looking forward to, you know, to cross ideas about what's going on in the world of soccer.
I'm ready to put you to the test today. I got a bunch of interesting topics that are really in the moment right now. So I guess the first one is, and I know I have a lot of Liga MX interest in my show, but also we always know when Tigres comes to Houston, Chivas Club America, they're big crowds. But Liga MX is suffering a bit now. The attendance looks down on TV. I think the ratings are down. What are some of the reasons you think behind this?
Nobody knows, but I can guess. One of the things is that people or fans are more accustomed to watch top-level soccer, watching European leagues, especially Premier League, Spanish League, and then they compare, and they realize that there is a huge difference between what happened in Europe and what happened in different parts of America. So that's one of the reasons. The other reason is that Mexico used to have a much even tournament. It's not the case these days. There are four or five teams that are ahead of the rest, and in 20 teams, or 18 teams, I should say, five teams is not enough. So and from those five teams, Chivas is not having a good time. Not even Tigres and Monterrey are having a good time. I will say maybe America, and especially Cruz Azul, today is the best team in Mexico. But that's reality. The level is not as good as it used to be. And on top of that, once you compare what it comes from Europe, you say, well, I think I'm going to devote more time to European soccer than to my country soccer. And it is a shame, and it's nobody's fault, because at the end, it's money. At the end, it's money. That's why Mbappé plays for Real Madrid and Haaland play for Man City, because all comes down to money. It's a shame. It is a shame, but that's the way it is.
Talking to Jorge Ramos, you remember him from Jorge Ramos and Subanda. Do you think in the case of Liga MX, the fact that there's no promotion and relegation, for instance, Jeff Luno, who owns Cancun FC, his team won the championship, but at the time there was no promotion, so they didn't get to advance to the top league. Could that be a part of it? And then the other part of it, could it be agents pushing deals and players from other countries and potentially taking the jobs of the Mexican player?
Oh, I keep saying that all the time. I don't know if it's the agent's fault or the executive from the league fault that they allow that. Mexican players can have many opportunities. And that's reality. So I keep saying it's not possible that you play in Mexico with eight foreigners on the field, okay, only three natives, and maybe some of those also are from outside Mexico, but because they have naturalization in Mexico, they can play as Mexicans too, and they are not Mexican. So on top of that, the playoff system, I don't agree with that. Like, I don't agree here in the United States with it either. 12 teams or 10 teams from 18 goes to postseason. There is no necessary effort from the players during the regular season. You don't teach them that they have to play their best in every game since the season start. And all that goes together, so the quality comes down. Mexico doesn't have a Class A player today because they make good money and they don't need to make that much effort, you know, to be in first division. So it's an amount of things that you put it together and you get what you get. Less people watching soccer in television, Mexican soccer in television, much less going to the stadiums right now. MLS is over MX today in attendance. So that's what it is.
You're saying it kills incentive for the players. Yeah. I think it provides a safety net, these giant playoff systems. It's designed to keep everybody involved and in the playoffs.
That's right.
I mean, we have New England coming here on Wednesday, and New England is still not mathematically out of it.
And he has a terrible season.
So, but I think it's also a very protective measure for coaches, GMs, and
for everybody.
Say, hey, we made the playoffs. Out of 29 teams.
It's crazy.
But expansion is the way it's going. All right. Yeah. So, I want to take you into, Jorge, I want to take you into Uruguay because you're going back there. You're very excited to go back there. I want to see your favorite team, Danubio.
That's right.
I want you to explain to my listeners again a little bit more about the rawness of South American soccer, how it is about competition, how it is about fighting your way to be a pro. Take us into all of that from your perspective, because it's a unique one.
Well, I mean, it's not easy over there, because over there, different of what happens in Mexico, all the kids got – they get the opportunity, you know, to show their talent. And if they are good, they go to different clubs and prove it. You don't have to pay there to play. If you are good, that's what the teams are looking for. Danubio, my team, those teams are looking for good talent so they can develop and then sell it. And that's how they survive, okay? They don't have sponsorships, or they do, but not that it's going to solve their economic situation. Television doesn't pay that much either. So the only way to survive is developing players, sell them, and get some very good money. On top of that, what is changing now because of this globalization, the fans are really hardcore fans, okay? For me, it's very difficult to see a Mexican fan rooting for Real Madrid or Barcelona. I mean, you could like the way they play and you enjoy them, but say that that's my team, I'm going to cry for that team. No, in South America, my team is my team. The ones abroad, I can appreciate what they bring, but my team is my team. So that it makes differences between South America, United States, Mexico, because over there they are really fan. Okay, they are not looking forward to be a fan of a foreign team. I don't know if so. I call them the ones that, you know, they think they are fan of Real Madrid or Barcelona. I tell them, no, they are not that. They are clients. They bought through the screen of the television. Yeah, they became fans. No, no, no. For Real Madrid, that guy that, you know, every Saturday or Sunday is in front of the TV set in America, for Real Madrid is a client. He's not a fan. Or for Barcelona, he's a client. He's not a fan. I'm sorry to the guys that are listening to this, and they thought that they were fans. No, no, no. They are confused. Fans are the ones that you are brought with, the team you are brought with. You went when you were a kid to the stadium to watch it, you know, somehow getting involved. But you cannot be a fan of a team in Europe. No way. For me, that's the way I see it. Many people don't like that, but I keep saying that year after year and after year. They are clients.
Jorge Ramos, you remember from Jorge Ramos and Subanda. So you grew up, it's very provincial, right? Danubio is everything to you.
Yes, it's everything to me. When comes soccer time, for me, it's Danubio time. If I have some more time, yes, I watch Real Madrid, Barcelona, Manchester City, and other teams. But, I mean, I have in my calendar when Danubio play. And my wife already knows that she has to go around the time of the game, Danubius game, because that is the game I'm looking for. Not the Barcelona, Real Madrid, the City, the PSG, the Manchester United, or anything like that.
Well, yeah, it's funny. I have a Romanian friend, and his team is Steaua Bucharest, and he watches them. Yet on the other hand, he constantly complains to me about some of the corruption in the league and everything. But every time they play, he has them on his computer watching them because same way as you grew up with Danubio in Uruguay.
It's
the same thing.
It's part of your life. That's how you grew up. Yes. In my case, I went with my father to the stadium every week. And, you know, I spent that was my best time with my father. When we were at the stadium watching Danubio, you know, and how are you going to compare that to anything else? I don't care how many champions Barcelona, Real Madrid, or any other team wins. I mean, Danubio is my team. And I'm not a Danubio fan for what we win because we don't win much. Because I love the team. I love the case, the colors, the idea behind, the type of soccer we like to play. That's what it really, I mean, to be a winner, I don't need a team. To be a winner, I have to be a winner every day when I get up and go out and work. I have to become a winner by myself, not my team. It cannot make me a winner. That's another thing.
I like
although that. I like to win. I like to win.
I like that a lot. You explained generational turnover with your father. That, I mean, that's so important in keeping Danubio alive, right?
Yes. And I always thank to the ceiling that he made me Danubio fan.
Jorge Ramos joining us. Jorge, explain the going to a stadium because it doesn't have all the bells and whistles. It doesn't, it's... it's hardcore football, and it's people watching the game, and they're going because of the game, because of the team, because of the love of it, because of them being a part of the fabric of it. Explain how a South American stadium is different to what we have here in America.
Well, and not everything is right in South America. There is a lot of violence, and things have been changing for the bad in the last 20 years, but yes, to go to the stadium is a ritual, okay? With your friends, with your father, with your family is fantastic. Then we have all those how you call it in English, those little papers, different colors that you throw, the confetti, the balloons, and then we have our own songs that we sang and at the stands. So it's a festivity. You go to Camp Nou or Bernabeu, and it's like going to an opera sometimes, okay? Because are all that's another thing. When you go to those stadiums, are all 90% are tourists. They are not really core fans. You understand? So in South America, it's different. The ones that goes there, it's not for tourism. Goes there to, you know, to root for your team, to push your team go forward. And so, yeah, it's a totally different story. I call games from Bernabeu, from Camp Nou, from Old Trafford, from you name it, and nothing is compared to South American or the festivity, you know, around. The atmosphere around the game is fantastic. Really, but violence is taking part of it now, and it's not good. It's not good. Not just in South America. Look at what happened yesterday at the Derby, Atletico de Madrid, Real Madrid. Yeah, that was.
Jorge Ramos joining us. Jorge, as we move on here, and we're going to wrap this up in a couple of minutes, just because of time. But I always enjoy talking to you so much.
Me too, me too.
It's wonderful for my listenership. You've probably, I think you said on the last show, you bought 4,000 games.
Is that right?
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Someone figured it out.
I don't know if it's four, but
yeah.
What I wanted to do was just give you a second here for any aspiring young commentators out there. What would you suggest to them if they wanted to get into this business?
That they have to do it for passion, no for publicity, no for, become famous. You have to feel it. If you don't feel it, you're going to be a mediocre. If you feel it, you're going to be a success. You have to like it. Then you have to listen to others that you would like to have a style, something like that, to learn. But it's something that comes from the heart. I mean, I've been asked many times, why don't you teach to do play-by-play? You cannot teach to do. I don't know how to teach it. Nobody taught me. I mean, I just did it by myself. Yeah, listening to others, okay? But that's it. It's very empiric. It's you, and they give you a mic, and then you have to feel, you have to put a show. Okay, you have to make the audience, either if it is radio or television, you have to make them being into the stadium, okay? Especially when you do radio, you have to be very creative. You have to be on top of everything, to create in the audience head, mind, the field. So I used to say all the time, the ball is in the right field. It's a defensive right field. The ball is in three-quarter of a field going forward on the right side. So the one that is listening to the game, he has the idea where the ball is, not just saying that Smith give it to Paul give it to Kenny. No. You have to say where Kenny is trying to do. But the advice is don't do it just to become famous. Do it because you feel it, because it is your passion. Because for me, it's a passion, okay? Then in the morning, you're never going to be sorry that you have to go to work because it is your passion. For this, you need to have passion.
Jorge, no better way to end the show. Listen, have a great trip back to Uruguay.
Thank you very much.
Enlightening my listeners and taking the time to come on the show. And wish you a great trip. And we catch up when you get back, okay?
Yes, anytime. You let me know. That's it, okay?
All right.
Thank you, Glenn. And keep up with your great job, huh?
We'll keep doing it. That is the legendary Jorge Ramos, and you know him. He was called the commentator of the Americas. By the way, he's not done. He's going to be coming back with stuff. That's the rumor out there. So we're waiting to see what's next for Jorge.
Hey, Jorge, man, not yet.
You'll break the news.
Yeah, you will.
All right. So that's
thank you.
Perfect thank way you. To end the
but news. It's going to be in Spanish, huh? Not in English. My broken English is not enough.
I think your English is good enough, 100%. It's definitely
good.
Thank
you. Thank you.
So that does it tonight. Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5, always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Listen, John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, nobody wants to get in an accident. If you do, it's a Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. By the way, they are getting soccer on the airwaves podcast of this show to listen to the interview with Jorge Ramos. Spotify, Apple, Google, and right here at ESPN975.com. Congratulations to the winners of the Chivas Club America tickets. And until Wednesday night, tomorrow night, I will be going live from Shell Energy Stadium ahead of the Dynamo New England Revolution. Good night, everyone.
ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.